Okay. Appeal 024301, Hasbro Incorporated versus Catalyst USA, and Mr. Stevens, good morning.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, counsel, I represent Hasbro, an arbitration claimant that after a lengthy hearing was awarded a substantial amount of damages against Appellee Catalyst. Hasbro is the appellant here because the district court vacated that arbitration award on purely formalistic grounds. In particular, the court concluded that it had been issued later than was prescribed by the rules of the arbitral tribunal.
Right, and the court, you know, taking the point that you have made, which is certainly correct at a general level, that ordinary rules of contract are what we're supposed to be applying to arbitration agreements, I thought was saying that when the parties chose the AAA to be the body that would handle their arbitration, they were also choosing the rules of the AAA, and embedded in those rules are mandatory time limits, and that this award was not rendered within those time limits, and it was actually not within the power of the arbitrators, thus getting us to Section 10 of the FAA, to exceed those time limits. Now, if the parties agreed in advance to it, you would agree with me that this was a correct ruling. I think your argument must be that somehow the parties didn't agree enough.
Your Honor, the parties did agree to adopt the AAA rules as a part of their agreement. Those rules did provide that the arbitrators were to make their award within 30 days of the closing of the hearing.
And they also provide a rule in Rule 37 for when the close of the hearing is. If briefs are to be filed, the hearing shall be declared closed as of the final date set by the arbitrator for receipt of the brief.
Although I do not wish to spend a lot of time on this particular issue, Your Honor, Rule 40 said the arbitrators could extend all dates other than the date for making the award, including the date for closing the hearing, for good cause. There was good cause here in that at the closing arguments, a new issue had been given to the arbitrators as to which they could well wish to take evidence.
But don't the arbitrators have to make an order to that effect? I mean, here we had this vast silence that went on for months from the arbitrators.
You do, Your Honor. They did ultimately say, we're closing the hearing on a certain date. They didn't give a reason. The parties had waived their right to a reasoned award.
So that date wasn't drawn from the hat?
It was drawn. What happened was, as often happens here, in the cases involving late awards, one party complained and said, you're late. We'd like to get a decision. And ultimately, we object to your making a decision. The other party said, Hasbro, if you don't want to hear evidence as to our attorney's fees, you ought to close the hearing and get on with it. They then promptly closed the hearing and within the time allowed by the rules, issued their award. Now, as to the effect of the parties having adopted those rules, let us assume there was a provision of the contract that an award was to be made within 30 days of the closing of the hearing. And let's assume the hearing was supposed to be closed. The award was not made. Now, under general contract provisions, that lack of timeliness is not ground for relief unless time is made of the essence, which it was not by the parties.
If we allow late awards to be enforced, what recourse do parties have when the arbitrators just sort of delay? And rules their fees when they're delaying.
I have two arguments to the initial question by the Chief Judge, and then an argument to rolling up, an answer to rolling up the fees. As to the question, what happens when arbitrators just go on and on and on and never decide? First, I suggest that it's purely a theoretical and not a practical problem. In virtually all of the cases, as I've said, what happens is very much like what happens here. When the parties say, we want a decision, arbitrators have decided. Now, let us assume, second, as Your Honor has asked, that there is the extreme circumstance where an arbitrator simply does not decide. There is a limited body of federal case law, limited because the circumstances are extreme and unlikely to occur. And I will give the court the cites for that. The cases are best collected in a case involving York Hanover Holding. I have only a Westlaw cite. It is 1993, Westlaw 159961. There is, among other cases, an appellate case discussed there. And what these cases say is that in the extreme circumstances, the court has asked me to posit that federal courts have a general equitable power to take a role in ongoing arbitration proceedings. And given the strong federal policy favoring arbitration, if a court is to intervene, it is certainly better that the court intervene to further arbitration than to frustrate arbitration, to order an arbitrator to make a decision rather than to vacate and nullify an arbitral award that has already been made.
But I'm putting the same thing to one side for a moment, because I'm actually not, that's not central to my concern. Of what importance do you think is the opinion of the AAA itself about the meaning of its rules? And the reason I ask that, of course, is because in this manual at Appendix 78, they indicate that certain requirements must be met if your decision is to have the status of a binding award. Specifically, your award must be within the scope of the arbitration and must be timely rendered. So that would be, that's not in the rule, that's the commentary to the rule, but it's the AAA's understanding of its own rule.
Your Honor,
is that important or not?
It's not important, Your Honor, because it, not only is it not in the rules, it's not in any commentary to the rules. It is in a manual for arbitrators, a training manual, and sections of that are labeled commentary, but they're not commentary that are made available to the public.
Well, prepared by, though, I mean, what I'm trying to get at is some analogy to administrative deference, since we sometimes have treated the AAA as something akin to an administrative body. And if there is some sense, if we thought these rules were ambiguous as to whether the time could be extended, whether the time is of the essence when you put all of these rules together, then perhaps we would be assisted in resolving that ambiguity by seeing what the itself thinks.
I believe that would be the case, Your Honor, if, as is the case with the federal rules of civil procedure, there follows the rule a publicly available commentary of the drafters of the rules that would inform everybody as to the likely effect. A party like Hasbro never saw the commentary, that manual given to AAA, prospective AAA arbitrators, until it was presented by opposing counsel who happens to be a AAA arbitrator in challenging the award. I see I am into my time for rebuttal. Would you?
You may save it as far as I'm concerned.
I will do
so. Save it.
Good morning, Ms. Francis.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court. This is a unique case, and that is why Catalyst is here today. There is no reported decision addressing the validity of an award that was issued late due to the arbitrator's attempt to extort unearned and unreasonable compensation, as evidenced by the fact that the arbitrators held on to the completed award and released it only after Catalyst objected to it.
Is there anything in either of the parties' contract or the arbitration rules indicating that time is of the essence?
Not in the rules specifically and not in the agreement specifically, but at common law, time is of the essence.
Not but in such a provision, why would we take the extraordinary step of throwing out the arbitration award altogether and forcing the parties to start all over again?
I will concede that it is a seemingly harsh result.
Yes.
But could I also add that, I mean, I think your beginning may be correct. This is a very unusual case, but the reason it's an unusual case is because instead of following the normally flexible approach that characterizes arbitration, the district judge read into this contract a time of the essence provision and tossed out the arbitration award altogether instead of going ahead and enforcing it, at least under the circumstances we have here. We don't have something where something drifted along for 5 or 6 years. We have a few months during which time there's an attorney's fees issue on the table, there is some correspondence. And I think the thing that makes this unusual is that the award's tossed out.
I disagree, Your Honor, respectfully. I think there have been several instances where awards have been thrown out. Awards have been thrown out when the delay has been deemed unreasonable. And here we had not only an unreasonable delay of 146 days, but we had a situation where the arbitrators had actually completed their award, as evidenced by the invoices. The award was completed in September, but for some reason they held on to it and did not give it to the parties until January.
It's so important as to render late awards unenforceable, then why did panelists not object immediately after the date for decision came and went without an award?
Didn't object immediately because it had invested, as did Hasbro, a tremendous amount of time and money into this arbitration.
But you were going to get a void result on your view of the case if it was after August the 10th.
No, that's not true, Your Honor. If the award had come down before we objected, then we would have been held to the award. We, in fact, did look to the arbitration panel to deliver award. We sent letters to the AAA saying, where is the award? And we had some questions and issues with the invoices as well, but we inquired twice as to where the award was.
And what's the timing of those inquiries?
The inquiries were both made in October, early October.
Right.
And
which was still several months after August. So, you know, when you get back to the point that my sister's made in terms of time being of the essence, obviously it was not, if you waited until October to even make an inquiry.
But it got to the point, Your Honors, where we had inquired about the award, we had inquired about the compensation of the arbitrators, and in response to those inquiries, we did not receive any explanation, much less a ruling, from the AAA. We got another invoice for $20,000 when we had been questioning the validity of that. It was at that point that Catalyst said, enough is enough. We're getting invoices with questionable fees, and we have an award that's being rendered late. And when is the award going to come? Is it going to come 10 years from now? At some point, and the case law does recognize this, the delay becomes unreasonable and enough is enough, and the parties do not have to wait any longer.
Ms. Bradley, what is it, do you think, about the context of commercial arbitration that would justify treating late awards in that context differently than we do, let's say, in the labor context?
In the labor context, the courts have recognized that industrial strife is the result of disputes, which is not the case in commercial arbitration. The parties would just resort to litigation. However, the courts have analogized commercial arbitration to certain types of labor contexts, which is why both sides have relied on a lot of labor law.
Well, and I would intervene and say that the reason the parties often in commercial contexts choose arbitration is quite similar to why they might in labor. If they have a joint venture, if they have a distributorship, if they have any kind of long-term relationship, they're not so different from a union and a company. They're trying to keep the relationship going. So at that policy level, it's hard to see why the rules should be so different.
But there's two reasons, I think, why in the commercial context parties choose arbitration. They choose it because oftentimes they anticipate it will be a less expensive route than litigation, and it will be a quicker route to a result, to recovery, than litigation will be. And in this case, we had neither a cheap or a quick resolution to the dispute.
What particular prejudice did Catalyst suffer by reason of the delay in issuing the award?
The prejudice that Catalyst suffered is great. In the simplest sense, Catalyst, as did Hasbro, did not receive the arbitration for which it bargained. Also, and more significantly, Catalyst had already paid $122,000 to the AAA, which included invoiced excessive and unearned compensation.
But you have really not preserved your compensation argument. You did not present it to the district court. I just don't see how, other than sort of vague background, that has anything to do with what's before us.
Did you?
Actually, Your Honors, we did present the issue to the court. We presented it under two sections of the Arbitration Act, including that section of that part of Section 10 that relates to the arbitrators exceeding their powers. We laid out the compensation issue in full to the district court, just under a different section. So it was fully presented. The district court simply chose not to address the compensation issue, focusing instead on the untimeliness of the award.
Where are we going to find it in the record?
It is in, if you'd like, I can give you a specific cite to the invoices. The briefs, of course, were not made part of the record, but in the appendix, you bear with me one moment, please. The invoices are attached to a fax from Attorney Aiken that appears at page 119 of the appendix, and the compensation issue is laid out in full in that fax, and the invoice is attached.
But is that then given to the district court as a reason not to enforce the award?
That is correct, Your Honor. He just chose not to address that issue.
Could you recognize that's severable? I mean, the district court could have just ruled on excessive fees, but chose to just throw out the award altogether. Well, those really are separate issues, aren't they?
They're separate issues, Your Honor, but if I'm understanding your question correctly, are you inquiring into whether or not the award could be, the invalid part of the award could be separated from the valid part of the award?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'd like to.
So the delay issue would be a separate issue from the excessive fee issue.
In this case, Your Honor, I would submit that the two issues are very intertwined. First of all, Catalyst is not objecting to the construction of the award, but the entire award itself. The very existence and the innate validity of the award are being challenged. In fact, there was no valid award made because the time passed for filing the award, thus rendering it void.
I was trying to get to that because I'm still trying to see the prejudice. I can understand you're saying how you were harmed was, you know, you had to pay these excess fees. But what else was it, other than you didn't get it in a timely manner? I mean, how were you harmed by not getting it within the time frame?
By not getting it within the time frame, Catalyst did not receive the arbitration that it bargained for. There was, in fact, a breach of contract by the arbitrators. And I don't think that the delay and the compensation issue can be separated because the delay was caused by no other reason than that the arbitrators were attempting to basically extort additional compensation from the parties. Catalyst had challenged the compensation because the panel chair charged $100 an hour over what he had disclosed to charge, and he charged for undisclosed study time in an amount that could, I believe, exceed about $40,000 from my calculations. And so there was no reason for the delay, the decision having been completed in September. There's no reason to hold on to the award until January. Other than that, the arbitrators were trying to get their bills paid, as evidenced by the submission, the repeated submission of invoices to the parties. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
The only prejudice to Catalyst from this award is the alleged requirement that it pay what it believes to be excessive fees to the AAA. That goes only to paragraph 3 of the award, which, as the court points out, is entirely separable. As we state in our brief, there are various objections to vacating paragraph 3 of the award, including a failure to raise the issue below. Catalyst complained about the fees, but it didn't tell the district court it ought to vacate the award on that ground. But passing that, Hasbro simply does not care whether the court directs confirmation of paragraph 3. We want confirmation of the other paragraphs of the award, which adjudicate the rights of the dispute that were submitted to the arbitrators. The dispute.
The fees are 50-50? So you'll pay half of these exorbitant fees?
If you don't confirm.
I'm asking, you know, if we confirm the award as a whole,
If the court looks at the record, we have paid virtually all of them. They claim we owe another $2,000. Hasbro.
But my question is simpler than that. According to the agreement, each party to this arbitration will pay half. Is that correct, of the arbitrator's fees?
According to the award, each party is to pay half. The arbitrators could have assessed the fees differently.
But it's a half and half split. So if it were $1 million in fees to get your $700,000 and some award, you'd have to pay $500,000. They'd have to pay $500,000.
$1 million in fees, I also would be asking the court to vacate
paragraph
3 of that award.
Okay.
This case is unprecedented, but not for the reasons stated by Catalyst. Other than the decision of the district court, there is not a single decision of any court of the state of Wisconsin, of any court of the United States of America, on any facts whatsoever, vacating a commercial arbitration award for lateness. They got the effect of the lateness of this award was that they got to keep the money longer. They had a benefit from the lateness of the award. The detriment was suffered by Hasbro. The court should reverse the decision of the district court and enter direct entry of judgment confirming the portion of the award that adjudicates the rights between Hasbro and Catalyst. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Ms. Bradford, thank you. All three.